And we will move along to the third case for this morning, United States v. Wantuck. Mr. O'Connor.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Timothy O'Connor. I represent the defendant appellant, Rafael Wantuck. This case is an immigration fraud prosecution from the Northern District of Illinois. Mr. Wantuck was charged with four offenses: conspiracy to commit immigration fraud, bribery of a public official, obtaining immigration documents through false statements, and making false statements in a matter within the jurisdiction of the INS to an INS officer. He proceeded to trial and was convicted of all of those offenses on June 5, 2006. In this appeal, we present a number of issues: four challenges to evidentiary rulings, a challenge to the sufficiency of the evidence, a challenge to the jury instructions. But I submit that the heart of the appeal, the nub of the case, is the question whether Mr. Wantuck was deprived of a fair trial by three basic evidentiary errors that the district court made. The first was the admission of lay opinion testimony as to Mr. Wantuck's intent. The second was the admission of a post-conspiracy confrontation between Mr. Wantuck and a man with whom he had gone to a fictitious travel agency to obtain a green card, or in the interim, an I-551 stamp in his passport that was to be a temporary green card, if you will. And finally, the admission of other acts evidence. We believe any of these errors we've raised in the briefs warrant reversal, but we think that's the heart of the case, or I submit.
Let me ask you this, because actually I might take the heart of the case one step further. As I understand it, there was extensive evidence introduced by the government in this case, including videotape evidence, other direct evidence. And so my question is why these three evidentiary errors that you have pointed out are not harmless, even if they were errors, even if, for example, on the lay opinion evidence, technically, it might not have helped the jury. They could have watched the videotape. But really, why are these not harmless errors?
Well, I think the reason that they are not harmless errors is that Mr. Wantuck's defense at heart was, I lacked criminal intent. He didn't deny that he went to the travel agency with these people. He claimed that he had been hired, that this had been, to his understanding, some effort to obtain money for computers.
But that's just a preposterous story. Or the jury could have believed, it seems to me, that this idea that he was going to help the INS with its Y2K computer modernization is almost beyond belief. And the jury was able to watch the videotapes at the quote-unquote travel agency, where he's coaching the clients, you know, as to what to say, I'm your brother or whatever. Didn't the jury, in fact, evaluate this wholly apart from these evidentiary points that you're raising?
I would submit not, and I was coming to the heart of why I think that this is not a harmless error case, because I think you're right, Judge Wood. I do not mean to be presumptuous, and I'm going to talk about why I think these were errors, but I think the real question is, was this harmful? And the reason I would suggest to the court that it is that this is not your average criminal trial. You're dealing with people from another culture. You're dealing with a lot of testimony that's coming in through interpreters. And the case was generated at root by a man who was a convicted felon, who was desperate to remain in the United States, who was being paid. He had every incentive to generate as many cases as he could for the government. And so I think, While I understand Your Honor's point, that a reasonable argument could be made for Mr. Wantuck, certainly one sufficient to avoid these errors not counting because they're harmless, that this is a case where you could not find him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, precisely because he's not a native of the United States. He's from a different culture, as Mr. Sinkowitz are, and it's possible that he could have believed this. And Mr. Sinkowitz had every incentive in the world to try to get as many people involved in this as possible.
But and that actually makes me think that it was really quite reasonable to introduce the sale of the contraband cigarettes and that set of tapes where Mr. Sinkowitz and Mr. Wantuck are talking about different possible ways of making money. They're talking about criminal ways of making money, not, you know, let's open up a fruit stand or something.
Well, I think we need to take a step back on that point and look first at what the inextricably intertwined evidence was. There were two tapes, a March 17, 1999 tape, and then what I believe Your Honor was referring to, which is a May 19th.
Second one, yeah.
Right, and let's start with the first one. The first one was the first tape represented the first time Mr. Wantuck and the cooperating witness had met. It was a sale of contraband cigarettes. It was presented extensively at trial. The transcript indicates 30 boxes of contraband cigarettes were brought into court. And so my point to Your Honor is, take that first tape. How is that inextricably intertwined? All it stands for is the first time they met.
And it shows that their relationship is born in a criminal activity, and maybe in and of itself that's not a lot, but evidence to be relevant just has to advance the ball a certain amount. And when followed up by the next tape, which is the one where the conversation eventually winds around to this immigration scam, then you can see where these people get going.
Well, I think what I would say to start with is that everything that Your Honor, and I'm going to talk about the May 19th tape, everything that Your Honor is talking about could be accomplished with the May 19th tape without the March 17th tape. I think what happened here in essence is that Mr. Wantuck essentially there was a mini trial within the trial, and the trial was at first, is he guilty? I mean, it wasn't presented this way. This is the substance of it, though, in effect. He was essentially tried and convicted first of contraband cigarette sales, and I think it was devastating to any effort he was going to make to defend the case. And there's nothing in that first transaction that has anything to do with immigration. Everything Your Honor is talking about.
It has to do, however, with whether or not he was an honest man being fooled by being from a different culture.
Well, but I would suggest that before you can get to whether the inextricably intertwined evidence negatives or proves an element, it has to be inextricably intertwined to start
with.
Doesn't
have to be intertwined to that extent if it advanced something. His defense is he didn't realize that what he was doing was criminal. But his relationship in the beginning was criminal. Kept on being criminal. It was never removed from the criminality that he entered into in the first agreement.
I think that
there can be differences of opinion on the subject.
Well, I think there can be, and what I would submit respectfully is this on that issue, which is that before you can get to saying, well, this can be this can come in because it proves an element, which I think is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
It has to be inextricably intertwined to start. That's what the way I read it. And this is several months, a couple months before the first discussion.
Of course, the definition of the intertwining, as you described, is a peculiar one all too, because it's largely subjective.
Well, I think there's some subjectivity in these judgments.
Always.
That's true. Yes, that's true. But let me say this too, with respect to this evidence, and that's that beyond the fact that. I don't think it was inextricably intertwined. Going to that second tape, much of the government had wonderful technology, and maybe it's going to change the law someday, where you could go through these transcripts and you could excise portions of them. And so my only point is, as I understand it, you really could have started with the discussion at Golden Travels about immigration, the way they were able to make video clips or cut them. And so I think that it would have been sufficient to serve the purposes of telling the jury how they got together to start with that. I would also say...
Let me just say, you may be right in the sense that possibly that would have been enough, but the Supreme Court has told us that we need to give the government some leeway in how it decides it's going to present its case, what the most effective way to present its case is. You may be saying that there was a little bit of piling on by having the first cigarette transaction as well as the second one, but that doesn't mean it can't come in either unless it reaches the point of being so prejudicial. And as Judge Bauer said, I mean, it was Mr. Wantuck who put his criminal intent on the table as an issue.
That is true. I would say that, briefly, the way I would look at it is, if the law is would be that the March 17th transaction comes in, then I think that there's very little left of the inextricably intertwined doctrine, because essentially you're entitled to go back to the very first time people meet and start with that. That would be my statement, and I don't think that's the law either. And with that, I would reserve my time for rebuttal.
That's fine. Thank you. Mr. X?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Charles X. I represent the government. Turning to the intricately related issue, the doctrine basically says that evidence that's needed to complete the story that's on trial, to explain the basis, the nature, and the development of the relationship between the participants in the crime, is extremely relevant and important, and that's exactly what was going on in this particular case. We've been talking about the various tapes that have been put into evidence. I do want to also make it clear that the government did not play all these tapes in their entirety. So we did try to make sure that any of the most inflammatory...
You could have gone a lot farther if Pilot got it, is what you're saying.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that there were other types of discussions, like narcotics trafficking and guns and things that we...
At some stage of the game, you decided you weren't going to put into all that because
right.
You would risk a reversal.
That's correct. What we
that's
tried
very
to,
clever of you.
What we tried to do was tell the story that was directly going to the defendant's intent. If these other acts...
I have a question about that second tape, which is the one that I gather is the incident in which the conversation eventually turns around to the immigration business. I haven't listened to the tape. Does the tape reveal whether it's Mr. Wantuck who raises the topic of immigration, or is it Mr. Sienkiewicz?
What happens is they're first talking about all these other incidents of the sales of...
I think the question is kind of simple to answer.
Does it
indicate who raised the issue first?
Yeah.
That's capable of the
no, issue,
or I don't remember.
Right. As I understand it, the issue was actually first, I think, brought up, but I would have to check the sequence, and I can't tell you with certainty, but I do remember Mr. Wantuck expressly saying that he was broke, he needed to pursue whatever avenue to make money, and then he said something to the effect that the cards... are easier to make money than any other business, at which point they start talking about the details of how this business works and why it's easier than...
Cards means these immigration
cards. And that is the words that come out of Mr. Wantuck's mouth, that I know that the actual transcripts have been provided and are part of the record.
Right. No, we can check. The reason I'm interested, I mean, first of all, I'm just interested, but secondly, if that's already on the tape, then you've got some pretty powerful evidence suggesting that Mr. Wantuck isn't a babe in the woods who had no idea that this was an illegal enterprise.
Right. Why that May 19th, 1999 tape is so important is that it shows the transition of the relationship going from They don't know each other. They meet for the purpose of transacting the sale of contraband cigarettes. And Mr. Wontop makes it clear that he's interested in engaging in more activity. Now, one of the things that the cooperator, Mr. Sienkiewicz, he expressly was out into the Polish community letting it be known that he had opened up this store, or basically almost an emporium of crime, where people in that community could come to transact almost any type of criminal business. And what he...
You're talking about GS Golden Travel?
That is exactly right, which stands for Greg Sienkiewicz Golden Travel. So what he was doing...
I thought it stood for Golden Schemes.
Well, as it turned out, it was very coincidental. But the important point is that Mr. Sienkiewicz put the word out on the street that now something very valuable was out on the street, and that was a real green card that could be obtained through a corrupt source. And that is really, I think, what establishes why Mr. Wontok would come in. And they were talking in that store, by the way, which is important, the context. They were in the travel agency when the topic of the cards came up.
So that's where they said that's the actual physical location of the second?
That's right. Mr. Wontok was completing, actually, the first transaction, was bringing a final load or box of cigarettes, and he was there to deliver that, and they were meeting in that travel agency, which the cooperator expressly created to invite any criminals that were interested in coming in to basically shop their wares or to engage in this bribe for green card scam.
I wanted to ask you for a minute about the confrontation in 2003 between Mr. Gudanowski and Mr. Wontok, because that did strike me as fairly powerful stuff in a way. There's Mr. Gudanowski telling him that if he doesn't get his comeuppance in this world, he should get it in the next world, and using the word guilty and all sorts of things that struck me as quite inflammatory.
Well, Your Honor, I can't dispute that. And I will say that while Mr. Gudanowski was uttering those words, they were a first to me, who I was the prosecutor that put him on direct. But one of the things that I think is very important about this confrontation is, and that was the reason that the questions were put forth to him, was that there was this confrontation, look what you did to me. And he never received the green card, and in fact, he was facing deportation at that point. He was
having paid a lot of money,
and not only having paid a lot of money, but the history was that Mr. Gudanowski, he had actually tried very hard to follow the rules and get lawful sponsorship through his employer, which never did come to fruition. And when he took years of time to try to do that, paid a lot of money to that lawyer and came up empty, he made the decision that what am I going to do? And so he moves his family to Canada, where the immigration laws are more lenient, and he's able to set up a life there. But the problem for that the testimony comes in is that he can't make a living there. He can make a living here. So he comes back to sneaks back into the Detroit Windsor Bridge and comes back to work at the job that he has had before he leaves. And so he's got a lot invested. He wants to support his family, and he needs a way to get them back to join him.
And
I bring that in simply to explain why he ended up saying what undeniably were some inflammatory words.
But the question is, are they so inflammatory that they deprived Mr. Wantuck?
I would submit not, because then the reason that I went into this detail was because the jury heard this, and they were able to assess and understand the frustration and the anger that Mr. Gudanowski was undergoing because of everything that he had gone through, all the money that he had thrown into this venture, and here's this guy that basically takes $16,000. That's a king's fortune to this man, and he blurts something out that clearly was inflammatory. But I also want to emphasize that the purpose for why that confrontation came in was to demonstrate the point that Mr. Wantuck, when he was confronted with this in this meeting over why did you do this to me, Mr. Wantuck ends up offering his own green card in some form of almost reparation of, yeah, you know, you basically got a raw deal.
Mr. Wontuck doesn't say much at all, actually. Is that
correct?
Right?
He's fairly silent, and which is another point for why this testimony was offered, was that he, in fact, had nothing to say. He was being confronted with some pretty vehement accusations, and he had nothing to say for himself as to, well, gee, I got fooled just like you got fooled. You know, he doesn't do that. Instead, what does he do? He takes out his green card and says, here, take mine. And it was in that context that I think that the jury was in a position to really evaluate the context of the inflammatory part of that piece of testimony.
Was it the subject of any instructions from the court, the incident?
I do not believe that that it was the subject of any instructions. What ended up happening?
Did anybody ask for any instructions?
No, I do not believe that the defendant at that point. What happened was when he was going into that inflammatory part, you know, he actually, you know, used the words. Yeah, he looked guilty.
Right.
He was sitting there, and it was at that point that an objection was interposed, and the court did sustain that objection and did admonish the jury to disregard, I believe, that particular part of the testimony. But the testimony in its totality, I do not believe that there was ever an imposition of the or of an objection to the entirety of it. But to get back to your point, your question, I believe, is could the jury, you know, put aside the inflammatory nature of it, I would submit that they could definitely do that, and they did do that because they understood the history and the background of what the, you know, what the frustration, which basically I think culminated in his testimony when he made those comments.
And I'm curious about the aftermath of all this stuff.
Yes.
It doesn't have anything to do with the issue here, but did Sinkovitz earn cancellation of his deportation order by all his shenanigans in this case?
He was here on a what's known as the S visa, which cooperators are able to maintain status.
Yes or no?
He has not, to my knowledge, yet obtained permanent citizenship.
But he hasn't been deported.
But he has not. That is absolutely correct. He is in the United States living what we believe to be a lawful livelihood.
Catching crooks, sir? I mean, is he?
No, we have, or I should say the FBI has taken him out of the business of creating any more webs for criminals.
What happens to all the green cards that were issued?
Well, what happened is
to all these people who paid money to stay here.
Well, most of the people that, or if not all of the people that were the clients of not only Mr. Wantuck, but there were many other brokers like Mr. Wantuck who brought the customers in, and virtually all of those people ended up getting deported in you know, administrative proceedings before the INS. If there are no other questions, I would respectfully request that the court affirm the conviction and sentence in all respects. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. O'Connor?
Yes, Judge. I'd like to begin with the Gudanowski confrontation and rebuttal. I think what the Gudanowski confrontation ended up being was a mid-trial victim impact statement. Imagine if this was the trial of Jeffrey Skilling, and in the middle of the trial, investors could come in and talk about the impact on their lives of having their investment in Enron wiped out. That's really what this ended up being.
Make it like the witness who got raped lets out a scream.
I'm sorry, Judge.
I say victims frequently during the trial will indicate outrage. Does that shock you?
I think that is true, except the difficulty here is there's no relevance to this. And the way we know that the reason I suggest respectfully...
Listen, I'm sympathetic to your point of view. I don't want you to think that I thought it was a great idea. Go ahead.
But the reason I want to suggest to the court respectfully that there's no inference that can be drawn about consciousness of guilt is briefly this. Mr. Gudanowski basically testified that he was headed over there to beat up Mr. Wantuck. I mean, that's the way I took it, confront him. It's a bar. He's angry. He gets there, and Mr. Wantuck is so miserable looking that all this anger he feels dissipates. That's what he said. And so he looks medicated. So number one, I don't think you can infer anything from someone in that state doing something. And number two, it's a bar. It's a confrontation. You know, Mr. Wantuck may have been trying to defuse it. So you can't, it's different than someone who decides to flee, as in Skozen, or who decides to take evidence from a government table, as in Briscoe. I don't think there was any relevance to this. I think it was a mid-trial victim impact statement, and it was a very moving vignette. And I think, like these other errors that I focused on, a fair trial after that is impossible. I wasn't in the courtroom, but I have to imagine it was a very searing moment. And I would say a good way to think of these errors is, if this is okay, what's left of the doctrine afterwards? With Gregor Senkiewicz and Clarence Robinson, if it's appropriate under Rule 701 for them to give an opinion as to Mr. Wantuck's intent, then I think there's really nothing left of Rule 701 in a criminal case, as long as you can show that the witness had something to do with the defendant. The witness can get up, go right into the province of the jury in the heart of the matter, and say, don't be a little person. Are you naive? Of course you don't buy a green card on the street. No fair trial is possible after that. No fair trial is possible after a mid-trial victim impact statement. And I would say no fair trial is possible. Well, I've run out of time. I'm sorry. Thank you.
You were appointed, were you not, Mr. O'Connor?
I was, Judge.
The court thanks you very much for your fine help on behalf of your client and to the court. We appreciate your help, that of your firm.
Thank you, Judge.
And thank you also to the government.